is great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show. You know, our mission is to serve you with advice and information that empowers you so you can make better financial decisions in your life. Today, I'll start by responding to your advice to me in our weekly Clark Stink segment. And later, oh boy, spying on you while you drive in your car and selling that information off to hurt you? Believe it or not, there are automakers doing that. I'm going to tell you who's up to no good. Now we get to hear where you feel the advice I gave is no good in today's Clark Stink segment.
I should have never encouraged you to speak.
You must think I'm pretty stupid.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Well, maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe you're right, pal.
Clark, you stink like roadkill stuck in your car's grill on a hot summer day. Wow. You talk up 2% back credit cards, but as a guard member, how do you not mention PenFed's Power Cash Card? It's 2% back if you're an active duty veteran or retiree, or you simply have a checking account with them. Plus, they have a cash bonus and 0% period as well. Robert.
So we do have a review on Clark.com of the PenFed credit card. Why I don't mention it in passing, I guess I have no excuse for that, do I?
All right.
Thank you.
I enjoy the show, but your comments to the person who has two rental properties worth $400,000 each missed the mark. You referred to the rent-to-market value ratio using that old 1% rule. That is, a property worth $400,000 should rent for about 1% of that, so $4,000. That 1% rule isn't old and irrelevant as the hardware in the Dallas Cowboys trophy case. In that person's scenario, let's assume the rent is $2,800. They said they clear $2,000. That would be 0.7%, which is actually pretty good these days, Jerry.
Yeah, Jerry, I've been trying to get my arms around this as well because it's become much harder to make the old formulas work with how much real estate prices have gone up. And the cost of new homes effectively, or homes for purchase, is completely out of whack versus the cost of monthly rent, which is why I've been discouraging people from buying investment real estate these days because it's just so hard to make the numbers work. You saying that 0.7 would be a fair substitute today is still a worthwhile investment decision. I'm still trying to work on that and see if I'm really giving outdated formulas by sticking to the 1%. So I'll take this as another clear signal that I need to keep working on it and come up with a more modern answer than the Dallas Cowboys.
Clark, please stop saying you can't afford things like a $25 shirt. You're a wealthy man, which you readily admit. It's not that you can't afford a $25 shirt. It's that you don't want to spend $25 on a shirt because you are thrifty and frugal. For a wealthy man to claim to not be able to afford low-cost items could be seen as out of touch to those who are truly needy and can't afford the basics in life. I know you're very generous and grateful for the life you have. Your choice of words just makes it sound like you're pretending to be poor. Mindy.
Mindy, gosh, you're right. You're right. It's insensitive and it's a poor choice of words. I choose to wear this shirt with $6.91. I choose to wear it because I don't value clothing. And so I don't choose to spend money on it. I'd rather have money in my pocket. Now, have I mentioned that my wife, Lane, repeatedly asks if she can update my wardrobe and come up with new attire for me? And that just doesn't feel like me.
I remember when your kids were little, and I can't remember which one it was. It might have been Steffi, who said, "We can't afford that," about something. And you both, your kids are all, I didn't see Rebecca when she was a little kid, but your other two that I did see as little kids called the Dollar Tree the toy store. You had them convinced that that was the toy store. And
yeah,
they could pick out $1 toy.
No, they were able to pick out two toys.
Oh, two. Very nice. Yeah.
They were able to buy two items at Dollar Tree when they were a dollar. And they never set foot in a Toys R Us when that was the big thing. ever with me because I didn't want them to suddenly see there was this entire array of toys that cost an arm, a leg, and a foot. And
you walk the walk. I love it. All right, here's the next one. Seriously, how can you advise your listeners to choose an insurance adjuster estimate over a roofer? Clearly, you never had to replace a roof or had to file an insurance claim for anything. I think the word is lowball, Irene.
Irene, okay, I don't know what context that was, but it's completely true that the insurance industry plays this lowball game. At the same time, there's been a real problem, particularly in the state of Florida, where there's been this game going on where roofers have been ripping off insurance companies, which ultimately causes rates to go up on homeowners insurance, replacing roofs that maybe didn't need replacing or charging exorbitant amounts. And the insurance companies were forced to pay these unconscionable amounts for the roof replacements that may not have been necessary in the first place. And so what you are hearing from me is my frustration and skepticism about what's going on with the unsavory part of the roofing industry. There are a lot of people in the roofing business, obviously, that are honest, decent, hardworking people doing a very dangerous job. There's also been a crooked side to the roofing industry that ultimately has cost all of us more money.
You frequently talk about small business retirement plans, but don't seem to understand the simple IRA. Please educate yourself on this awesome plan. For example, Fidelity offers this plan free of charge, and employees can defer up to $16,000, and there's a $3,000 catch-up for folks over 50. The simple is the right solution for small businesses with employee. The SEP requires company contributions for all employees at the same rate as the owner. The simple doesn't have this requirement, making it a superior choice for businesses with employees. Jim.
Jim, thank you. So why do I never cover the simple? Because the simple is not simple in terms of the rules for it. It has very complex rules for paperwork and implementation. And if an employer ever messes up on the paperwork, then you got a problem. The beauty of what Fidelity does is Fidelity keeps employers in compliance with the rules for a simple. The SEP that you hear me talk about is actually what should be called the simple because it has minimal paperwork and very easy to do, and it can be done pretty much with any financial house. The simple is a more involved thing to set up. There are very tight deadlines on the simple, and it's really too technical a product for me to spend a lot of time talking about.
Your new stance on utility-grade solar has me stumped. You noted that utility companies now love solar and it's their cheapest way of generating power. I've seen these 200 to 1,000 acre solar farms where they ripped out all the trees and forests to plant solar panels, yet my electricity rates continue to climb each year. You say that residential solar panel industry is in trouble, that people cannot get a decent payback period anymore, yet just a few months ago, you said that solar panels have dropped in price to their lowest prices ever. Why would we want to destroy pristine forests when we have empty rooftops that could allow us to generate our own power? At that point, we could control our own power rates and the monopoly utility companies become a non-issue for us. You've said that you have solar on your own properties and you finally had me convinced to do so on my properties. But now somehow you're saying we should just wait and trust the power companies to charge us for their almost no-cost solar power? Clark, what? Michael.
Oh, Michael, I know that I have been inconsistent and confusing on solar. Okay, so you're going to have to indulge me a bit because this requires significant explanation. What's happened is the power companies, the monopoly power companies, which unfortunately most states still have this antiquated monopoly power model, they are so powerful in, that's a bad pun, in state legislatures, and they control the utility commissions in the states, that they get the statutes written and the regulations enforced in a way that has made it almost impossible in many states for a consumer to have any benefit from slapping solar up on their roofs. That's what's happened, is they have changed the rules of the game to discriminate against individuals running essentially their own power company on their roofs. And the problem is corruption. The problem is that power at one time needed to be a monopoly. Power no longer needs to be a monopoly. Power in a modern era should be distributed. So yes, if we had a true free market going on with how power was done, it would completely make sense to slap those panels up on your roof, or if you have a yard in your yard on sticks, whatever they call those posts. But because the game has been manipulated by the monopoly power companies and their buddies in the legislatures, it has made it uneconomical in many states now for an individual to put solar up. And now the deck is stacked where the most efficient way to do it is with these large solar farms. So the reason my answer changed is because of what happened, not in the economics of it, but in the politics of solar.
Dear Clark Stinkaton, you often mention the massive fees associated with the investment arm of a bank. I have some investments at Wells Fargo. I can hear you groan as Krista reads this to you. I pay 1% assets under management. Don't continue to stink by saying I'm paying massive fees without explaining what those fees are. Please help me investigate what massive fees I might be paying. I think they're kind of making fun of you saying
massive. Oh, I know that. Massive, gigantic, enormous, humongous.
You're enthusiastic. If I find that I am, I will move my money to one of your three favorites. By the way, if this is read on your podcast, please say hello to my friend Jackie. She's a huge fan. Thank you for all you do, Bill.
Jackie, Bill, great to have you here. Okay, so what you face when you're with a bank-based brokerage is you have some specific problems. First of all, has Wells Fargo signed a fiduciary agreement with you, meaning that they are legally required to do what's in your best interest? Be very rare, if ever, if a bank-based brokerage would do that. Second, you're paying 1% for asset management on their part. But the other problem you will find often with the bank-based brokerages is the fees on the funds they put you in are far, far higher than the fees you face on funds if you go with one of my favorite children. In addition, if you are going to be with a big institution like a bank-based brokerage, like the Wells Fargo Advisors, what you're going to find is that the institutional advice available from my favorite children would be much cheaper than 1%. So check to see what the fees are on the underlying expenses of the funds you're in with Wells Fargo. And has Wells Fargo signed a fiduciary agreement with you? If they are not operating as a fiduciary, they are unacceptable is a choice to handle your money.
In your eyes, yes.
In my eyes. No, they are unacceptable if they are not a fiduciary, period.
Travel with just a carry-on for a 10-day to 2-week trip? No wonder you stink. I'm a large man who wears double X shirts. I have a 46-inch waist and pants, and I need a bag bigger than a carry-on just to pack my clothing. I need a clean shirt every day, and I change my pants at least every 3 days, more often in warmer climates. It goes without saying that I change my underwear and socks daily. How do you stay clean and keep the stink off when you travel with only a carry-on? You say that's all you take, but you never say what you pack. Please enlighten us and lay out your clothing options for a 2-week trip. While we can often live with our own body odor, I hate to make others suffer from it. Micah.
I love this, Micah. Okay. So, Micah, on YouTube, there are videos, one person after another, who is as obsessed with carry-ons as I am, and they lay out everything they pack, how they pack it, how they use the vacuum packs to basically shrink ray the items in their carry-on bag. And maybe, I know this is maybe TMI for people, but I can, if we want to do a video.
No, we should definitely do a video. I was going to say we need it.
We'll lay it out when I do a 1-week trip, 10-day trip, lay out everything I take. And then you get to see me sitting on my suitcase to get it to zip so it stays carry-on size. What I actually do is, you know how the suitcases have the expander things, the carry-ons? So I expand the suitcase, pack it, zip it, and then I sit on it, compress it, and then I zip the expander zipper till it's closed carry-on regulation size.
You know what I just recently did? I was on a long trip. Well, part of it was our staff trip, but I also went before on another trip. So what I did was I checked my hotel's laundry service, and one pair of like yoga pants was going to be, I think it was 24 euros to clean. So I went, I looked at reviews on Google, and I walked, you know, like a mile to a laundromat that was well-reviewed, wash and fold. I did a huge, like all my clothes that I've been wearing for a week and a half, and the total I paid was 22 euros, and they folded them. They did a great job. And so I do laundry when I'm on a trip like that. It just, I can't do it. I cannot hack it with a carry-on. So that's another option. If you think about it, I've done that in different places around the world. I did laundry in Thailand one time. Like I find the wash and folds, and they're much cheaper than the hotel.
So here's confessions I need to confess for Micah. So Micah took my family, two of my three kids, my wife and I, and my middle child's boyfriend, and we went to Australia. And we were there for, I think it was like 11 days. And I said, I got everybody do the carry-on. And I said, I promise we shouldn't have any problem at all finding a wash and fold on the trip. Guess what? We had trouble finding a wash and fold. I still have family members that are sore at me that we did not take bigger suitcases and check them. So Micah, even in my own household, they're like, look what you did to us.
Mm-mm. Okay. And then Steve also wrote about doing the space bags to do the carry-on, like you said. And he said, I use space bags to pack my carry-on. Hint, if you don't have access to a vacuum, zip the bag about 3/4 closed, then gently sit on it while seated. Zip the bag the rest of the way and voila. Also, when walking into my local Costco yesterday, the bouncer, as I like to call him, noticed I was obeying a certain Clark shopping rule and asked me if I wanted a cart. I thought, what would Clark say about that? Again, that's from Steve.
Steve, it's well known at Costco that I don't get a cart. Then I'll end up buying something heavy and I have to get a cart. And they bust me so hard. They say, oh, really? You need a cart today, huh? Yeah.
Well, it's pretty hard to carry the paper towels and toilet paper on your own without a cart.
How about if you get drinks? Like my wife loves Pellegrino, which we talked about is now cheaper. So, and she only likes the Pellegrino in the glass bottles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And those are so heavy.
And the dog food. I have switched to the salmon dog food at Costco, by the way, and my dogs love it.
Is it Kirkland Signature?
It's Kirkland Signature, yeah. I was using the lamb. I'd mentioned that before. And somebody said it wasn't the best food to feed them. Somebody wrote in to Clark Stinks about that. And so I looked into it, and now I'm giving them the salmon one, salmon and sweet potato, which they love.
Now that I eat fish all the time with my new heart-healthy diet, I'm eating a lot of salmon.
You want to try the Kirkland Signature?
You think I should eat the Kirkland? That's what it'll be, my little snacks, you know, when I'm on the airplane.
I'll bring you
like
a baggie.
When I fly Southwest, if you ever fly Southwest, you got to know Southwest has this sawdust in a pack that they give you as the snack on the plane. Pre-COVID, Southwest had great snacks they gave out, but now they've cheaped out and they're insulting their passengers by giving these little sawdust packs. Have you ever seen them?
Are they the pretzel?
Well, there's pretzels in there that have no taste at all. They are in the shape of pretzels. So I don't know what they are. And then they give you these little, I don't know what those are. And then they give you something that's like their version of a Cheez-It.
Okay.
But somehow they got the flavor out of those too. I don't know what is going on with management at Southwest right now.
Because
did you see the thing on the new seats they want to put in planes?
No, I did not.
Oh, man. They are getting trashed online. And then they've gone into that thing that corporations do where they hide from the media and the public instead of addressing how much people hate the new seats. Because apparently it's like sitting on just sheer metal with a decorative cover on the metal.
Yeah, but you would do that to save money.
Oh, I would stand. Yeah, I mean, Ryanair had the right idea with the standing seats.
Yeah, just get strapped
in. They give you a much lower price, and you're in a, what do you call those, five-point
harnesses.
And you just stand for a couple hours, and they can get so many more people on the airplane. I love that. I would do that for a two-hour or shorter flight, because I like to stand all the time anyway.
True.
I'm sorry about all that digression.
If you're still with us.
Yes, yes. So coming up ahead, we're going to talk about something that's not funny at all. General Motors and a handful of other automakers are selling their customers down the river, and it is inexcusable.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, then they'll show you a variety of coverage that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at Progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This freaks me out. Okay. Auto insurer says, hey, if you let us track how you drive, we'll set your rates by that, and we won't raise your rates, we'll only lower them. And you decide if you're going to have that device in your car. That's fine with me. You have made a decision to allow the spying in return for you potentially getting a lower price. What General Motors has been doing for at least the last 2 years that's only seen the light of day is inexcusable, and I know the lawyers are going to have fun with this one. GM has the OnStar stuff, and in the thing where they tell you they value your privacy, you're giving them permission to spy on you and sell the data on you on how you drive. You, if you drive a GM car that you've got activated the OnStar stuff, GM has sold down to every nth of your driving minute by minute to LexisNexis, which is a big database company, and you have the right to see your report. If you haven't heard about this, you Google it or whatever search engine you use, you'll see news report after news report after news report about GM selling its customers down the river. So this guy out of nowhere gets a 21% premium increase for his insurance. He can't find out what's going on, and other insurers want to charge him a fortune. So an insurance agent said, hey, let me tell you what's going on. GM selling your data to LexisNexis. Well, you have a right to see it like you would see a credit report. So he asked for the report. It's 258 pages long, tracking everything about his driving, according to this New York Times story. 130 pages just detailed every single time they were in the car, he or his wife. Start times, end times, distance driven, hard braking, sharp accelerations, everything about their drive. And then they sell that to auto insurers. Again, no idea this is going on. This is insane. This is ridiculous. GM should be ashamed of itself. It's got to be so little money GM is making selling its customers down the river. I saw in a story in the New York Post about people selling their GM cars because they were so furious that GM was doing this. This is not at all acceptable behavior. And it's not just GM. Honda, Kia, Hyundai are also selling off this data. They are selling it to LexisNexis and other brokers. Not okay. This is wrong. Unacceptable. Again, you use the technology features in your car as part of the benefit of driving that car. For that automaker to turn around and put in their legal notices, when it says, oh, here's your terms of service, and it goes page after page after page. Who reads that? Nobody reads that stuff, right? Why would you? You shouldn't have to. And what I hate is corporate America says, we value your privacy, when they send you the privacy notice, and then they tell you all the ways that they violate your privacy. This is not the way things should work. The reason this stuff goes on here is we don't have in the United States what's so common in other countries. We don't have a privacy law because our Congress hasn't done anything about this. But this is just not the way life should work. The GM feature is called OnStar Smart Driver. If you have activated OnStar Smart Driver in your car, GM is selling your data to great harm. Know it. And even if you enjoy the features of OnStar Smart Driver, I'd say you got to shut it down. Shut it off. You know, I wish that in MBA school, they spent 1 second talking about business ethics and the right way to treat a customer. Because this ain't it.
What would you do if Tesla started doing this?
I'd be angry as all get out. Because if you have a Tesla, it's basically a computer on wheels. I would be absolutely furious if Tesla was doing this. Now, the reason Tesla wouldn't is Tesla has a rep in the insurance industry because of the speed of a Tesla and the acceleration. They're looked at as more dangerous cars and people pay higher insurance rates. Tesla wouldn't want to add anything to that reputation by showing, oh, yeah, that person did go 0 to 60 in 2.9 seconds.
Okay. We'll go to questions. Sam in Ohio says, my wife and I are both in our 40s. I work and have a SEP IRA funded completely by my employer at $20,000 a year. My wife does not work. Are we eligible for traditional and Roth IRAs? Our income is under $200,000 a year.
You are eligible for Roth. The rules for traditionals are different, but I'd like you to do, because you're in a SEP, and that's pre-tax money going in, I want you to do a Roth as your second savings. The Roth limits phase out. It's like $230,000, something like that. So you're absolutely fine doing Roth contributions as well as doing the SEP.
An employer fully funded SEP at $20,000. That's pretty amazing.
That's pretty great, isn't it?
Wow. Todd in Florida says, Clark's car buying guide suggests pre-qualifying with an online bank. I went to do that at two different banks, including Capital One, who I've done the same with in the past, but now they only pre-qualify you if you purchase a car through the online bank's car buying service.
Thanks for that info.
And even then, the rates were the same or worse than dealer manufacturer rates. Is it time to update the online guidance?
Okay, so let me explain what's going on. The auto manufacturers, so many brands now, are way overstocked with new vehicles. And so they brought back factory subsidized financing. And I think in the article you read, I talk about pre-qualifying at a credit union or an online bank for financing. And then if the dealer can beat it or the manufacturer can beat it, you know that it's a really great deal. So you do want to pre-qualify because it's part of the process of being able to comparison shop and knowing if the loan rate you're being offered is better. Right now, a lot of manufacturers are back to offering subsidized vehicle loan rates because they know that's been a real dissatisfier for people in an era of higher interest rates. So if they come in and essentially buy down the interest rate for you, then that is a real incentive to buy one of those unloved new cars sitting on dealer lots.
Okay, and Joshua in Tennessee says, my daughter is a high school sophomore. She's saved and invested in a Vanguard UTMA and now has $12,000.
Wow, at age 15.
Amazing. In a couple of years, she'll be filling out the FAFSA, and we want to maximize her financial aid opportunities, which her savings will compromise. What do you recommend we do with what she's saved? I thought about using the money to start a new 529 account with her as the beneficiary that she can convert into a Roth in 15 years, or if she chooses to have children of her own utilized for college savings for her children. I'd love to get your thoughts on these ideas or any alternative recommendations you might have. Thanks, Josh.
Okay, so Josh, if she is saving this money, I'm supposing, and I may be jumping to a conclusion, that she's working, which would make her eligible for a Roth IRA. Migrating this money into a Roth before college would eliminate any problems with her qualifying for financial aid. As an alternative, moving the money to a 529 plan that you own, because it is in an UTMA, so you would have the legal right to do this, to move it into the 529, naming you as the owner, her as the beneficiary. You would then be able to do just as you said. It would not hurt her for financial aid. It would qualify her ultimately for transferring the money to the Roth under the new transfer procedures. Or as far as for her own kids someday, if she didn't need it, that would be up to you because you would be the owner of the account. You would change the beneficiary well down the road to your grandkids from your daughter. But the easiest answer of all, the simplest of all, is if she is working and she works enough over the next 2 years before entering college that she has enough earnings to move that $12,000 into a Roth IRA, because you can do up to $7,000 each year, then you solve the problem anyway, because assets in a retirement account do not count towards eligibility for financial aid in college. And that's fantastic that your 15-year-old has managed to save that much money already. Those are lifetime habits that change her future. And I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you have an absolutely wonderful weekend. And we look forward to serving you next week with additional ideas for you to save more, spend less, and avoid getting ripped off.